If you were to ask me which is the most important profession in the world today, I would say it's parenting. I think we are this wonderful country where there is enough intrinsic demand within the country, and there's enough external demand for what we do outside of the country. Whatever big or small that happens in your life, don't ever forget where you've come from. An entrepreneur meant you didn't get a job out of college.
Correct.
That was the only reason why you would do something on your own. It is a very scary thing if you start, but the only way to deal with it is to start.
Hello and welcome. I am Anupam Kher. In the world ever-changing, the focus now more than ever is on India-Bharat. On this show, I will be talking to some of the most influential people of our great country from all walks of life to bring you their unique view on India's culture, politics, history, and the influence and the imprint it's leaving on global stage. My guest this week is no exception. He's a prominent Indian entrepreneur, author, and content creator. Welcome, Ankur Variku.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank
Namaskar.
You. Namaskar.
Ankur Variku was born in 1980. He has a bachelor's degree in physics and an MBA, and he's been an entrepreneur since 2008. He was the founding CEO of Groupon India and co-founded Nearby.com, a platform connecting users with local merchants offering deals on services and experiences. Variku has authored three best-selling books and has over 12 million followers on social media. He's also an angel investor, educator, and public speaker whose overall philosophy emphasizes authenticity, resilience, and continuous learning.
Pleasure to be amongst you.
Same here, same here. I was very happy that I will have a Kashmiri on the on the show today.
I know, Kashmir, Kashmir. We'll go.
Kashmir, Kashmir. And but you have a very interesting life graph.
Very
you
much so.
You were born in Amritsar, you came to Delhi at the age of 3, then you went to America, came back at the age of 24 and started startups, and now you are on your fourth startup or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, correct.
So what makes you do all these things?
It's just the fact that we have one life, sir. We don't know why we've been planted on this planet.
Mm.
And all that I've told myself is, if you have just one life, don't live it with just one identity.
Hmm.
So if somebody asks me, what do you do, Ankur?
Hmm.
It'll be a tragedy if I give them a designation at a company.
Hmm.
And it'll be a joy if I tell them, how much time do you have? Because I do so many things that I would love to tell you everything that there is to it.
So what was the changing point?
I went to the US at the age of 22.
Uh-huh.
It was a really big thing for our family.
What?
To do a PhD in physics. So Mira, I was only fascinated by physics.
Okay.
At that point of time, my only ambition in life was to become a scientist.
Or an astronaut.
A space scientist to be precise.
Huh.
Work at NASA, be like this cool scientist like Shah Rukh Khan in the movie Swadesh and all that. And I went there, everything was happening per plan. I got a full scholarship to go to the Michigan State University for its PhD program. And those 2 years, I thoroughly enjoyed my time, but I never felt like I was truly happy. I felt like I was so good with the subject that it came clinically to me.
Mm.
So it gave me the success that world would see as and say, "Are, this person is a rock star and he's doing so well. He's meant to do this." But standing in front of the mirror, being true to myself, I knew that I wasn't happy. So at the age of 24, I decided to quit my PhD program, drop out of it, much to the disappointment of my parents.
Mm.
Come back to India and start my life all over again.
You studied physics, you even enrolled in PhD in physics. How much did that education help you in your journey as an entrepreneur?
Oh, it really did. Well, you know, the best thing that science teaches you is this way of looking at the world from a hypothesis perspective.
Okay.
Nothing is true until it's proven. And there is a method to prove something.
Mm.
You start with a hypothesis, this must be true.
Mm.
And then you go about creating an experiment to prove whether it is or not.
Mm.
That's how I live my life.
Mm.
Nothing is true until I've truly proven it. So I feel that ability to create structure in chaos came from my training in the sciences, which has really helped as an entrepreneur, because entrepreneurial life is just all chaotic. You don't know what the next day will be.
And in 2008, being an entrepreneur in India...
An entrepreneur meant you didn't get a job out of college.
Correct.
That was the only reason why you would do something on your own.
Exactly.
Because why would you, when there are nice jobs, and there's a government job, and there are these nice cushy jobs, and I had a really good job. So out of business school, I was a management consultant.
Mm.
And management consulting is one of the most coveted jobs out of business school. It pays you really well, you're traveling, you're staying in 5-star hotels, you're meeting clients whose faces you see on the covers of newspapers and magazines, telling them on how they should be running their business. So it was just wild, but it was beautiful. And to quit all of that, to become an entrepreneur, again, my parents were like, what is wrong with you? Why do you keep making these random decisions in your life every 4 or 5 years? But I felt, again, that there was so much happening in the country, number one. Number two, the internet was a really new thing.
Right.
There were these very cool startups coming up and they were creating a dent. And we were as consumers beginning to see the impact of that. And I just wanted to ride that wave because I didn't know if I would get that chance ever again or not. And I didn't want to leave with regret, should have done it, I wish I had. And I'm so glad I
How much has it changed since then?
Oh, it's such a different world, sir. I know back then it was all about you have to make this work because this is your last shot, perhaps. Today's generation, the setup that we are in, the opportunities we sit on, the way that the world is connected, makes the founder of today so much more audacious, so much more ambitious. They know that they have multiple tries. They know that they want to fail and fail very fast so that they learn very fast. They know that failure is not death. And it's brilliant to see 20-year-olds with such passion, with such drive, with such ambition, leading the charter saying, we'll win the world. This is our place, this is our moment, this is our time. Nothing's going to stop us. There is capital coming our way, there is attention coming our way, there are customers and markets being built. It's so, so different from
what And all these opportunities are being offered in Bharat, in India.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Both, and that's the fascinating part. I think we are this wonderful country where there is enough intrinsic demand within the country, and there's enough external demand for what we do outside of the country. So when you look at, say, software, there is this business model which is make in India, but make for outside of India. So you have these wonderful setups, really large ones, who have their offices, their dev centers in India, build great software through the abilities of people that we have trained. And it's mostly made for outside of India.
Right.
Because they are the ones who would find it at the right price, find it just as competitive, find it just as good, offered at great value and so on. And then you have these D2C called direct-to-consumer brands nowadays, which is like, you know, let's not go to the retail store. Let's not go through the distribution channel. Let's just sell directly to the consumer. We have a great product to build and we can do that because we believe in our product. And there is a market, really large market, that is willing to adopt that, whether it's pet services or it's personal care or it's fashion or it's whatnot. I'm just fascinated by so many things coming in this country every now and then, both for outside of the country and for within.
Both of us, means you have Kashmiri Pandit parents, so am I. What is it being Kashmiri Pandit mean to you?
I would admit that I'm a Kashmiri Pandit by observation, not by experience. What I mean by that is I never stayed in Kashmir. I have mom and dad who grew up in Kashmir, studied in Kashmir, moved out very early when they got married. So all of my Kashmiri roots and my culture comes from them, looking at my grandmother, my maternal and paternal side, but never really truly experiencing it firsthand in our own sense. So for me, it was all about stories. It was all about culture. It was all about values. It was all about being grounded and remaining grounded. I remember this one thing that my ma always tells me, that whatever big or small that happens in your life, don't ever forget where you've come from. What my parents wonderfully did was they just acted as examples. I saw them and I saw them conduct themselves despite hardships, despite really, really hard circumstances in our life. They never gave up on their values of what it is to be a good human. And
so is that something you will want to transfer to your own two children?
No, that I think is the only thing I would want to do. I almost say this, that they are blessed to be born in today's India where so many things are taken care of by design and by default. Opportunities are coming their way and education is like brilliant. We didn't have access to all of that. They're going to the finest schools, being taught by the finest teachers. Our elder son just came back from Malaysia for a school trip where he was competing with teams outside. And it's fascinating. My first flight was at 22 and that was straight to the US, bought on a loan that my father took because that was the only way we could afford that one-way ticket. And now they have all of those luxuries. So I believe that the only job as parents is to give them the right set of values.
So what does it mean to be an Indian? You said that this is what your parents taught you. This is what you want to teach your children.
Yeah.
What does your country, Bharat?
For me, it stands for three things. One, it stands for a very deep-rooted sense of culture and values that we have inherited because of our history, because of our faith. It tells that there is God in everyone. And by that measure, an animal, a tree, statue, everything has life in it that we should respect and we should absolutely hold to the highest order. And I love that about the faith with which we were raised and how that has really shaped up our identity. Number two is the period that we are in. I find myself so lucky. Born in 1980, when the country was going through its own struggles, we were still a very young country, we still are. But to see this transformation in 40 years, it's unbelievable. And now you would have seen that from 1950s to where it is today. It doesn't feel like one lifetime. It feels like many lifetimes have happened. And now I remember the time when there used to be this, you know, black and white television, antenna on the roof.
Right. You had to hit it.
Is the signal coming or not? Shout from the roof, then there needs to be connection. Now everything is there. Our kids don't understand what it is to walk up to the television, turn the knob and hit the TV to get that signal. Yeah. It's such a fascinating time to be alive. And the third thing is, for me, it was time that had to happen. We're finally, I believe, being recognized for who we truly are globally and even within. We were almost like in the hiding. We were like, no, should we step out? Should we put our neck out? Should we call our opinion out or not? But now it just feels like we are this very confident adult moved out from a teenage body. We're fully aware of who we are. We're aware of our weaknesses. We're aware of our mishaps and our whatever other misdoings, but we're willing to correct. We're willing to improve. Mm. And we are not going to take any random opinion about us at just face value. We're willing to defend ourselves and place our identity. So I just like this bold, ambitious, audacious India Bharat that we are part of right now.
What is your opinion about social media?
It's a double-edged sword. I would say that there's this beautiful quote which says, you are the average of the five people you spend most time with. I think that quote requires a revision in today's world. You're the average of the five ideas or content pieces that you most consume.
Mm.
Because that is going to determine who you become.
Right.
If you go on a Twitter or an Insta or a YouTube and you consume content which is provocative, which is full of hate, which is always going to pinpoint this one did this, that one said this, this is what's wrong, this is what there. You are going to become that person because that's who we are as humans. We just hardwire ourselves by the conditioning that happens.
Mm.
But on the other hand, if you were to consume content that shows all the positivity in the world and uplifting and great stories of inspiration and motivation, you're going to believe that and become that. I think that choice remains with the individual. It becomes a responsibility of, let's say, the parent to encourage kids towards that, which we certainly do. We always tell Vidur and Uzma that watch content that makes you feel happy. Again, Vidur, he just came back from Malaysia. He was terribly homesick because it was his first time and he was all crying, missing us. And we said, here's one thing you have to do. Go and become physically active, like go for a swim. Go and just walk on the treadmill in the gym and don't watch social media because that numbs you. It doesn't make you feel alive. It is just entertainment. It is not education. And you have to always form this distinction between entertainment and education. And anything that makes you feel alive is helping you. Anything that makes you feel numb is destroying you. And social media has the capability of making you feel both. I'm glad that I'm on the side of education and learning, because I wouldn't have it any other way. I can't dance and sing for the love of it.
You are on social media.
I am on social media. I have a very active presence on social media. I create content.
Yes, and that's what I'm saying. You're not on English language Wikipedia page.
I am not.
Why?
Because I don't care. Like it's not something that validates my
identity. How do you manage to not be on that?
I don't even know. Like there would be people who would try to be on, say, a Wikipedia or someplace.
Oh, okay.
But for me, it's not important.
So how do you react to criticism? Because you are dealing with 20-year-old people and 20-year-old young generation is constantly worried about criticism.
I really feel that for somebody to diss on a complete stranger online means that there is something broken in your own life. You can't be a truly happy person and troll somebody else. I fundamentally believe that a truly happy person will never troll anyone because they're just happy. They don't need to pull somebody else down to be happy.
Right.
And the second one really helps me as well, which is in all of this noise of trolling and hate and whatnot that happens on social media, there's often some signal, somebody who perhaps is trying to tell you something meaningful, but not necessarily in the appropriate tonality. So my job becomes to abstract the message from the tone of the message. Okay. So if somebody is abusing me, calling me names, but trying to tell me something that I should be doing something about, that becomes my job. And I think it requires some bit of maturity and wisdom and experience over years to get to that point. But that's what I'm capable of, and I love that about myself. So I can instantly pick up the signal from that noise and say, oh, this person, while calling me all of those names, is trying to hint towards this one thing. And if I were to fix that one thing, it will only make me a better version of myself.
Also, the other thing which really bothers Gen Z is the fear of failure.
Yes. I also didn't like failure for the longest time. Because when you're going through it, you almost feel like, I wish I wasn't. But it's only upon reflection that you realize it taught you so much. It made you a stronger person, a bigger person. What I don't like about failure, particularly in today's world, is we are constantly, particularly in our culture, told to very quickly move on from a failure. And I feel that's the wrong approach. Because if you very quickly move on from your failure, you haven't digested it and realize what it taught you. So you're bound to fail again and again and again. So the only thing that I tell is you cannot run away from failure. Everybody in this world, no matter how successful they are, they have failed and failed innumerable times. The only difference between them and somebody else who continues to fail is that they sat down with that failure and digested and reflected and figured what they learned from it. Do that. Just do that. Don't run away from failure.
What to do about the fear of failure? Because according to me, fear of failure makes them mediocre.
It does, because they are not willing to take that risk.
Right.
They want that easy and simple and not be ruffling any feathers, rocking the boat, nothing like that. I often say this. This is a very interesting way of thinking about it. Fear, for me, is like a muscle that you build upon. So I often say that one of the better ways of dealing with failure is to actually try and fail every day, but in a way that doesn't cost you much. So here are some examples. Go to a mall and ask somebody for 500 rupees. You most likely will fail. Like they may shut you out, they may get physically violent, they may call the cops or the guards or whatnot. But in that moment, when you fail, it will teach you something about your reaction system. In the elevator, when you're taking to the lift, say hello to the stranger that you would never otherwise. Go to your boss or your manager and ask for something that you know is very hard for them to give and nobody else has asked. It's quite likely they will say no to you. But do something trivial every day that helps you build the muscle of how to deal with failure. When you start doing that, you automatically train yourself for bigger and bigger and bigger failures. We were having this conversation before this talk. There was a very interesting survey done in the US. People were asked, what is it that you fear the most in life? Number two was death. Number two. Number one was public speaking.
Wow, really?
Public speaking in the US, according to that survey at least, was rated as something that people fear the most. And why is that? Because people don't want to be standing on stage and be judged, be looked at, be laughed at. And I often say this, yes, it is a very scary thing if you start, but the only way to deal with it is to start.
This was a very fascinating statement of yours. I'll actually read it out. You said, success we all get to see, stories we rarely get to hear. The lesson is in the story, not the success.
Absolutely.
Can you share one of the stories?
I think this is one of my favorite stories. I don't know how to think about luck.
Okay.
Because luck for me is a very interesting concept. I think that I got lucky. And I've got lucky a lot of times in life. So I often think of what would have happened if that didn't happen. Here's an example. I, as a science student, had one ambition when I was in class 11th and 12th, and that was prepare for the IITs, clear the IIT exam, go to IIT, become the engineer that everyone wants to become. And I tried it twice, didn't make it. I was never intelligent enough to crack the IITs. So I went to Delhi University. But that's where I met my wife. And if I had made it to IIT, I may have never met her. Yes. I may have met a very different person and I've had a different life altogether. Right. I come back from the US and I don't know what I'm going to do in life. And my mother is like, oh, you know what? I was reading this newspaper the other day and I saw this ad for a very young business school. See what you see of it. So I go and I really like the concept. That's where I applied. And that's where I did my MBA, which was the Indian School of Business. Mm. And that frankly, 1 year changed my life completely. Wow. I am in a consulting job. I one day get an email at the ISB, my business school's alumni email group, saying, hey, we are a German internet company and we are looking to set up business in India. We're looking for people to lead that. So if anyone's interested, apply. And I thought that was fascinating and I applied. And I got that opportunity. And the next thing I know, I was leading their entire business in India. And I went back to them one day and I said, why did you choose me? Because I'm sure there were other people who would have been just as capable, if not more. And they were like, you know, surprisingly, you were the only one who applied.
Wow, that's amazing.
Which is like so bizarre. Like, I didn't know whether to feel good or bad about it because I came first in a race that I was the only one running. Mm. But there's so many such serendipitous events that have happened in life where you don't know what would have happened if they didn't. So it's very easy for people to look at the end result, like look at Anupam Kher and look at all the accolades, the film fair, the national awards, everything that comes, and of course the love that you get and the respect. But how many people truly know the grind? Mm. And how many people truly know what is it that you have given up to get to this point? Mm. Because that is what shaped you up, not the award at the end of it. That was the outcome.
I'm really tempted to tell a story of mine.
Oh, please, I would love to.
So, you know, this during my struggle period, I had no money. And I used to live in Bandra East. And I used to, because those days there was no casting companies, there was no direction, there was no regular place to go to. Mm. Nowadays there are reality shows, casting companies. Yeah. So how do you kill time? So I used to sit a local train, which used to start from Bandra East, go to VT, and come back and do two, three times. Just go and sit there. And I will go and sit next to a window seat and look outside. So one day I went there and there was a gentleman sitting outside near that my seat. So I sat next to him and he was looking outside and he was wearing dark glasses. And after some time he said, aap bade restless ho, looking outside only. Kya hai? So you know how Indians are and how we are. I said, kaam nahi mil raha, gold medalist hoon drama school se, kuch nahi mil raha. तो उसने कहा कि कलर्ड कपड़े पहना करो सो आई वॉज वेयरिंग ए वाइट शर्ट आई सेड ठीक है एंड आफ्टर सम टाइम सम प्लेस ही गॉट अप एंड आई डिस्कवर्ड ही वॉज अ ब्लाइंड मैन
दैट इज इनसेन
इट वॉज अनरियल
दैट इज सो इनसेन
फॉर अ ब्लाइंड मैन टू फील दैट आई एम रेस्टलेस एंड टू टेल मी दैट यू शुड वेयर कलर्ड क्लोथ्स Whenever I know now feel low, I always wear red shirt or green shirt or yellow shirt or something like that. I wrote this story in Chicken Soup and the Soul for Indian Soul.
My God, that is such a great
story. So there are so many things that teach you lessons.
Lessons in life.
Where do you see the balance between traditional values and modern aspiration among the Indian youth today?
I feel, again, a lot of the responsibility I genuinely believe is on parenting. If you were to ask me, which is the most important profession in the world today, I would say it's parenting. Mm. Because that profession can make or break this world, definitely our country. Mm. We learn so much, particularly in our culture. Family is such an important component. Mm. You learn from observation, you of course learn from the teaching that you get, you learn from the experiences. Mm. And I feel that parents, if they ground their kids in the right values, in the right culture, they will have that very strong foundation. Mm. Upon which, you could build a lovely 2-3-story building if you desire to. You could build a skyscraper if you wish to. Mm. You could tear down what was the original building and make another one. As long as the foundation is set, you literally have anything to play by depending on how the world is reacting. I don't think I can predict the future. I don't know where we will be both as a country and as a world in the next 2-3 decades. Mm. But I do believe that the world is sitting on perhaps the best available opportunities that we've ever seen. We in this country are going to experience, in my opinion, the golden era that we have seen not seen for centuries. Centuries.
Oh, wonderful.
And I'm so bullish on what this country is going to experience in the next 2 to 3 decades. Economically, socially, emotionally for sure, and the power that we will have within and the respect that we'll garner from outside, that if we have the right values and the right way of looking at things, we're set. We're just set. We are 1/5 of the world's population, one of the youngest, if not the youngest countries in the world, with a thriving economy. You can imagine how the next 30 years are going to unfold. We're going to define the economic strength of the world. We're going to certainly define the geopolitical strength of the world. We're going to define the socioeconomic strength of the world. And I do believe that our voice will matter, because it's always mattered, but now we have the audacity to also express it in a manner that we've never done before.
So true.
Very excited.
Thank you, Ankur Warigu.
Thank you so much, sir.
And thank you for watching. Join me next week for another intimate and compelling sit-down, and let's talk Bharat.